All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Sahibhutadaya Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Gauri. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Is this thing loud enough? Okay. All right. No? Well, yeah, it's kind of hard to. I don't feel like it. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 2, Text 29. Okay. Seva Godanam Lakshmiya.
Seva Godanam Lakshmiya.
Niketam Sita Govrisham.
Niketam Sita Govrisham.
Charayan Anugan Gopan. Ranadvenuraviramat Saeva Godanan Lakshmya Niketan Sita Govrisham Charayan Anugan Gopan Ranadvenuraniramat Saeva Godanam Lakshmya Niketam Sita Govrisham Charayan Anugan Rokopan Runandenur Ariramat
Thank you.
He, Lord Krishna.
Eva.
Certainly.
Godanam.
The treasure of cows.
Lakshmya.
By opulence.
Niketam.
Reservoir.
Sita
Govrisham.
Beautiful cows and bulls.
Charayan.
Herding.
Anugan.
Followers.
Gopan.
Cower boys.
Ranat. Flowing.
Venu.
Flute.
Ariyaramat.
Enlivened. And speaking of which, I was very enlivened to hear what the Mukhya read this morning, that you don't have to be an expert at Sanskrit according to Srila Prabhupada. So, there's hope for us. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. While herding the very beautiful bulls, the Lord, who was the reservoir of all opulence and fortune, used to blow his flute, and thus he enlivened his faithful followers, the coward boys. Purport. As he grew to 6 and 7 years old, the Lord was given charge of looking after the cows and bulls in the grazing grounds. He was the son of a well-to-do landholder who owned hundreds and thousands of cows, and according to Vedic economics, one is considered to be a rich man by the strength of his store of grains and cows. With only these two things, cows and grain, humanity can solve its eating problem. Human society needs only sufficient grain and sufficient cows to solve its economic problems. All other things but these two are artificial necessities created by man to kill his valuable life at the human level and waste his time in things which are not needed. Lord Krishna, as the teacher of human society, personally showed by his acts that the mercantile community, or the Vaishyas, should herd cows and bulls and thus give protection to the valuable animals. According to Smriti regulation, the cow is the mother and the bull the father of the human being. The cow is the mother because just as one sucks the breast of one's mother, human society takes cow's milk. Similarly, the bull is the father of human society because the father earns for the children just as the bull tills the ground to produce food grains. Human society will kill its spirit of life by killing the father and the mother. It is mentioned herein that the beautiful cows and bulls were various checkered colors, red, black, green, yellow, ash, etc. And because of their colors and healthy, smiling features, the atmosphere was enlivening. Over and above all, the Lord used to play his celebrated flute. The sound vibrated by his flute would give his friends such transcendental pleasure, they would forget all the talks of the Brahmananda, which is so praised by impersonalists. These coward boys, as will be explained by Shukadeva Goswami, were living entities who had accumulated heaps of pious acts and thus were enjoined with the Lord in person and were hearing his transcendental flute. The Brahma Samhita 5:30 confirms the Lord's blowing his transcendental flute. Venum panantam aravinda dalayarakshan varhavatam samasitam buddhasundarangam gandharva koti kamaniya vishesha shobham govindam mari purusham tamaham vajami. Thank you all. But Brahmaji said, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who plays on his transcendental flute. His eyes are like lotus flowers. He is decorated with peacock plumes, and his bodily color resembles a fresh black cloud, although his bodily features are more beautiful than millions of cupids. These are the special features of the Lord. Om Gyana Karandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chaksurun Nitamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Panchakalpa Tribhishcha Kripa Sindhu Devicha Patitano Pavane Bhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. So we're continuing towards the end of this second chapter of Canto 3, that Uddhava is giving his overview of the pastimes of Krishna. He's been going through from the beginning, from Krishna's birth, and he's going to go through the different pastimes of Krishna, sort of in summary form. So today we're hearing about actually two different topics. They're connected, but the cows and the flute. They're connected in that the coward boys were enjoying, of course, the pastime of herding the cows with Krishna, and they were also enjoying, of course, as he played the flute. It's also described that coward boys also have flutes. They play along sometimes. So, but I'm going to more or less separate these and talk about first Krishna and the cows, and then Krishna and his flute. So, cows are very important to Krishna and to the whole Vrindavan society and to whole human society at large. But they're also a very integral part of Krishna's eternal pastimes. So it's not just that, okay, he had some cows and that was their livelihood. No, cows are something that's extremely important to Krishna. Krishna's called Gopal, Govinda, and all these names indicating his form as a coward boy. And that is because this is his eternal, original sarup. The original personality of Godhead is a cowherd boy in Vrindavan. So this, you could say the Lord's whole, part of his whole identity, not his whole identity, but a part of it, is herding the cows, being in Vrindavan, being with the cows, being with everything that's there. So his place, and his place is a pastime, what are they called? Gokula on earth, and his supreme planet of Goloka. So the planet of the cows, that's where Krishna lives eternally in the spiritual world. So, of course, Srila Prabhupada states that Krishna is showing, giving example to human society of the importance of cows. And the cow is particularly valued in Vedic society, besides its economic value, which was very obvious, and Prabhupada explained how with just cows and bulls and grains and milkstuffs, basically everyone would have enough to eat and there would be so much less problems in the world. But they're also a symbol of religion. The cow and the bull are Bhumi and Dharma. And as the Prabhupada says in the purport, the cow and the bull are like the mother and the father. So they must be very much protected and appreciated. And the cow's value was appreciated in Vedic culture. This is from a purport by Srila Prabhupada, Bhagavatam 3.5.7. The cow is the most important animal for developing the human body to perfection. The body can be maintained by any kind of foodstuff, but cow's milk is particularly essential for developing the finer tissues of the human brain so that one can understand the intricacies of transcendental knowledge. A civilized man is expected to live on foodstuffs comprising of fruits, vegetables, grain, sugar, and milk. The bull helps in the agricultural process of producing grain, etc., and thus in one sense the bull is the father of humankind, whereas the cow is the mother, for she supplies milk to human society. A civilized man is therefore expected to give all protection to the bulls and cows. Now, of course, it's quite a different situation today in our very misguided modern society that is killing the cows out of ignorance. And this animal killing, not only is it a very, a very sinful act that is, harming living entities, particularly the most important living entities other than human beings, the cows, but their reactions. And Prabhupada mentions that the warfare that we see all throughout human society is largely a reaction to this cow killing. This is from a letter in 1968 that Prabhupada wrote. And so the background of this was 1968, as some of you who are more or less my age remember, was sort of the height of the protests and the problems with the Vietnam War. The Vietnam War is going on, and many young people were demonstrating and were objecting to this, feeling that wasn't really a war that was needed. So he's talking to, I guess some devotees had written to him about that. It's almost like they wanted Prabhupada to take a stand, take a side, the young devotees who were all pretty much, I'd say on the liberal side, kind of most of us were. So he said, this political struggle is the reaction of karma. Both the opposing parties, the students who have taken shelter in the churches, that was like an amnesty thing or something, and the government force, which is coming to arrest them, both of them are in the same category, because if it were a question of meat eating or supporting the slaughterhouse, both of them would agree. So they think that they're diametrically opposed on moral issues, but on the most important moral issue, they're completely in accord. Now, of course, not everybody was, but I would say almost everybody back then were meat eaters. I mean, later, as things moved along, some of those people became vegetarian, but not so much, really. So the present situation is a reaction to man's sinful activities. If they were serious about mitigating the unpalatable situation of society, They must accept Krishna consciousness, otherwise there's no possibility of peace in the world. So that's was Prabhupada's take on the situation, that as long as we're killing the cow, killing the bull, how is there ever going to be peace? There's always going to be these sinful reactions, so there will be wars. So that's something really always to remember, I think, the importance of this and protecting the cow. And he's also, of course, saying, one other thing he said about, he liked to say, simple living and high thinking. That was one of the mottos that we really like to probably use. He would say, the Krishna conscious movement is engaging devotees in producing their own food and living self-sufficiently so that rascals may see how they can live very peacefully, eat food grains when it's grown themselves, drink milk, and chant Hare Krishna. That was the simple living and the high thinking. It's so simple that it's even hard for devotees to accept that solutions could be so simple, because they are, actually. Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada said, is simple for the simple, difficult for the crooked, those with, pure hearts and are just seeing what Krishna wants and what it requires to have a society that is happy and peaceful. It's very simple. Be Krishna conscious. Follow the principles. Don't kill animals. But anyway, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna shows his love for and the importance of the cows. Chapter 24 begins the story, of course, of the lifting of Govardhan Hill. And first, counseling the Govardhan Puja, then, of course, Indra's reaction, and Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill to save all of his devotees, then the worship of the cows, the worship of the Brahmins, and Indra finally comes, and he is very contrite. I don't know how he gets away with these things. It happens over and over. I was reading one purport at the end of one of Indra's very nice prayers, where he's totally surrendering to Krishna here after Govardhan Puja. Then, I think it was Sanatana Goswami says, but of course he does it again after the Parijata flower incident, I was just reading that one lately. Krishna fights Banasura on behalf of the demigods. Is it Banasura? Bhomasura, the son of the earth, Bhumi. Takes back Aditi, so all of her jewelry, which he had taken, and Aditi, of course, is Indra's mother. He takes back Mandara Mountain. He takes all the stuff. He returns to Indra. He and Satyabhama go there. Satyabhama went along for the big battle, fighting on Garuda. I guess she thought it'd be fun. Kind of an outing, if you're a queen in Dwarka. Well, it was very, very unusual. But at any rate, what does Indra do? After Satyabhama says, hey, I like that Parijata tree. And he had promised it to her, so he takes the Parijata tree that was in Indra's courtyard, and so Indra goes to battle with him, fighting over the Parijata. Indra. But at any rate, there were some good things that came out of that. But I'll start a little more at the beginning. Chapter 24, verse 21, Krishna is convincing Nanda of why they should do this, why they should stop Indra Puja and do Govardhan Puja. He says, the occupational duty of the Vaishyas are conceived in four divisions, farming, commerce, cow protection, and lending money. Out of these, we are always engaged in cow protection. So first he established, this was their position, this was their varna, and even amongst the four possible careers or, occupations, Vaishyas, theirs was cow protection. He says, therefore, may a sacrifice for the pleasure of the cows, the Brahmins, and Govardhan Hill begin. With all the paraphernalia collected for the worshipping of Indra, let the sacrifice be formed. Okay, then as the story goes on, I thought a very interesting part was then after Indra comes to apologize and to offer his prayers to Krishna, of course, who does he bring along? Sarabi. He's scared to go in front of Indra after he just tried to, demolish Vrindavan and all of the devotees. So he thinks, well, Sarabi, Krishna is very dear to the cows, so that'll ease it a little bit. Have Sarabi go first. Sarabi is okay. And of course, it sort of worked, and Krishna was okay, and he accepts the prayers of Indra. And then Indra gives him a particular name. This is the first time, according to Acharyas, that this name was used for Krishna. What was that name? Govinda. Who said that? Good, you get star, gold star. Govinda. So, this is Jiva Goswami's purport after Indra Bhaze and honors Krishna. He says, Govinda means Indra of the cows, for that name is indicated with the words Priyana Indra Gavam. May Indra of the cows be pleased with us, 10:26:25. It'll be said in verse 28, Iti go gokula patim govindam abhischa sa. He bathed Govinda, who is the master of the cows and the coward community. Though Krishna was already named Dasharatha, he is now named Govinda, since that was a superior name, 10:27:23. And then Jiva continues, the phrase gokula patim govindam abhischa means that in joy and astonishment, Indra understood that Krishna was the master of cows and gokula, and also his master. At least for a while, he got it. Okay. I found this. This is a lecture of Srila Prabhupada in 1968 in Los Angeles, where he discusses the name Govinda. Prabhupada says, so we are worshiper of the original absolute personality of Godhead, Govindam. Govindam. Go means senses, go means cows, and go means the land. And Vindam means he who gives pleasure, the pleasure potency of all three things, senses, cows, and land. The proprietor of all land, the maintainer of all land, gives pleasure to the people of all, is Govinda, Krishna, Govindam. And he's a protector, pleasing to the cows. You've seen many pictures of Krishna. He is loving the cows. Why is the cow loved by him? Why not another animal? There are many other animals. I'm just thinking, actually, they have water, they have buffalo, they have goats, even in Vrindavan, right? They have all these different animals. Why particularly cow? Because cow protection is most important business of the human society. In offering obeisances to Krishna, it said, Namo Brahmane Devaya, Go Brahmane Tayacha, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Person who is the protector of the Brahmins and the cows. The first qualification is that he protects the Brahmins and the cows. Next, he protects the whole world, Jagatataya Krishna. And he is Krishna Govindaya Govinda. So Krishna has, of course, so many wonderful names that reflect his relationship with the cows. Govinda, Gopal, Gokulananda, and the others. Anyway, so many of them go, you know, in the name. And because this is his eternal relationship with the cows. And also, he teaches how important the cows are and cow protection is for a successful human society. And shifting gears here. Talk about the flute. So the 64 qualities of Krishna are described in the Nectar Devotion, and of all of those, only four are found in Krishna. Up to 60 is found in Narayan and on down, living entities, Shiva, Brahma, etc. So the four qualities that we find in Krishna, performer of wonderful varieties of pastimes, surrounded by devotees, endowed with wonderful love of Godhead, an excellence of beauty which cannot be rivaled anywhere in creation, and, I'm a little out of order here, but finally, he attracts all living entities all over the universes by playing his flute. So he attracts everyone. He attracts the plants, the animals, even the non-living or inanimate objects in Vrindavan, the demigods, the residents of Raja, everyone. People throughout the planetary systems. So Srila Prabhupada mentions in this purport, the flute gives his friend transcendental pleasures so they would forget all the talks of Brahmananda. I was wondering where that came from. You know, why would he mention people about, you know, mentioned giving up Brahmananda, which basically means impersonalism. But then I saw that in 10:21, in the story of the Vaina Gita, there is this verse. His own mother, that's actually one gopi speaking to another gopi. In this forest, all the birds have risen onto the beautiful branches of the trees to see Krishna. With closed eyes, they are simply listening in silence to the sweet vibration of the flute, and they are not attracted by any other sound. Surely these birds are on the same level as great sages. In 21, oops, I forget which verse it was, but it's in chapter 21. And in addition to Chakravarti Thakura's purport, he says, one gopi said, the Atma Rama Munis fixed in transcendental knowledge and renunciation cannot be disturbed by Krishna. Another gopi said, no, that's not true. Krishna also attracts the Munis with his sweetness. All these birds that we were just talking about, the birds in Vrindavan, resemble moonies because they live in the forest, keep their eyes closed, observe silence, and remain motionless. Perched on the branches of the trees, they become ecstatic, listening to the flute. Thus, even the great moonies become maddened by Krishna's flute song, which is a completely spiritual vibration. So this was an example that apparently some of the birds that are there in Vrindavan Forest were great sages and moonies, and they may have had still some, you know, attraction to impersonalism. Well, obviously they must have had some bhakti as well, because here they are in Vrindavan. But when they heard Krishna's flute, they gave up all of that. They gave up that impersonalism. Now, in the purport, it's particularly mentioned about the coward boys, so I don't know so much about that, which coward boys might have had, you know, any of that inclination, but we certainly saw it with the birds there in Vrindavan. So, of course, many, many scriptures, especially Srimad Bhagavatam, are praising Krishna's flute. And its qualities are very, very unique. It's very, very wonderful. And obviously, it's one not only one of the only of the four qualities that only Krishna possesses, but it's also one of the sweetest. In the Laghu Bhagavatamrita by Rupa Goswami, he says, this is verse 526, there are four types of sweetness present in Krishna and Vraja: the sweetness of his power, the sweetness of his pastimes, the sweetness of his flute, and the sweetness of his form. These are somewhat similar to the four qualities, but maybe a little bit different. So in verse 534, he said that quality is called Venu Madhuryam, the sweetness of the flute. And Rupa Goswami Maharaj says, whatever sweetness resides in all the sounds in the whole universe is contained in one atom of the sound of Krishna's flute. When the flute sounds attractively, all moving and living entities, absorbed in most intense bliss, reverse their qualities. Shiva and others become bewildered and say, what kind of bewitching mantra is this that we are drinking with our ears? What most astonishing object is this? And then he quotes 10th canto, 10:35, 14, and 15. That's chapter 35. Is that the Yugala Gita? I think it is. That's where it's the different, you know, Krishna wandering through the forest and the gopis are singing about all those wonderful qualities. And they say, oh, pious Mother Yashoda. Now the gopis are speaking to Mother Yashoda. So in other words, now they're not going to speak so much about how he's affecting them, because this is be a little rasa vasa. You know, they don't want to get their Madhurya mood mixed with their Vatsalya mood. So they speak a little bit more distantly. They say, your son who's expert in all the arts of herding cows has invented many new styles of flute playing. When he takes his flute to his bimbo red lips and sends forth the tones of the harmonic scale and variegated melodies, Brahma, Shiva, Indra, and the other demigods become confused upon hearing the sound. Although they are most learned authorities, they cannot ascertain the essence of the music, and they bow down with their heads and hearts. 10:35, 14, and 15. Okay. Now, I'm trying to confuse you here with the... Now, this is a commentary by Baladev Vijayabhushana on Laghu Bhagavatamrita, the verse that we just read from Rupa Goswami. Okay, Baladev says, this is a statement made by the gopis, but how has the flute sound become the highest truth now? Now they are doubtful about their previous convictions. And this jita tattva, that means the demigods. They thus bow down to their hearts and heads, the source of that sound. The flute sound does not exist at all in Dwarka Krishna. This thus is an outstanding type of sweetness. So it is so sweet that if the demigods had any other desires, karmakanda, etc., which we know the demigods are usually part of their belief system, you could say, or part of their activities, says, but hearing the flute, they want to give it all up and just surrender to Krishna because of Krishna's incredible sweetness, the incredible beauty, and the power of his flute. You see, it's not just a beautiful sound. Like if you heard some music, you know, you say, well, that person's really good, he plays really well on the flute. No, much more than that. It has this tremendous power on the heart. Krishna's flute affects the heart directly of his devotees, and even sometimes non-devotees. This is also described, of course. Now I'm moving to nectar devotion, Rupa Goswami's Bhakti-rasamrita Sindhu, where he's talking about the flute, and he says, another example from Vidugdha Madhava. Vidugdha Madhava is a play written by Rupa Goswami. very nice. It's about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Right. Then he actually has two plays. They're sort of like together. The Dagda Madhava is about Vrindavan pastimes, and then Lalita Madhava moves into Dwarka pastimes. Anyway. The sound of Krishna's flute wandered everywhere, piercing through the shell of the universe. It stopped the clouds, amazed the Gandharva Tumbura, broke the meditation of the yogis headed by Sananda, astonished Brahma, made Bali unsteady with longing, and made Ananta dizzy. It's really something, Krishna plays his flute. In other words, it affects the entire universe. Now, just as a little aside here, how many kinds of flutes does Krishna have? Three basic ones, right? Now, he has some others, some longer ones. I think there's six altogether mentioned. But the three basic ones are types of flutes. Oh, this is a Nectar Devotion, chapter 26. There are three kinds of flutes used by Krishna. One is called Venu, one is called Murali, and the third is called Vamsi. Venu is very small, not more than 6 inches long, with six holes for whistling. Murali is about 18 inches long, with a hole in the end and four holes on the body of the flute. This kind of flute produces a very enchanting sound. That must be the one he uses a lot. The Vamsi flute is about 15 inches long with 9 holes on its body. Then there's a few other ones described too. So anyway, he has all these nice flutes he plays. Now, because we're talking about the cows, I also wanted to read this. This is about how the cows are affected by the flute. So they have a relationship with the flute and Krishna as well, as human beings and everyone else. This is actually from Govinda Lilamrita, chapter 19. Govinda Lilamrita is a really nice book of Krishna's pastimes written by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. You know, we always think Krishnadas Kaviraj is Chaitanya Charitamrita, right? But he also wrote some really nice things about Krishna's pastimes. This is a beautiful book that goes through all the different, through the day, the different pastimes of Krishna. And anyway, and by the way, just a little, you know, I always like to insert my own political opinions, not political opinions, my personal grievances. One thing that bothers me is sometimes you hear a lot of different pastimes and verses people throw out without attribution. And I guess as being a kind of a professor and being having a research background, you don't do that. You know, I mean, we should say where something comes from. Okay. So that's why I always say it's Govinda Lilamrita, chapter 19. So if anybody wants to look at it and check it, it's there. Okay. He says, Govinda, with the sound of his flute, he made the cows stop at the bank of a large pond in the forest and let the cows drink. He divided the cows into different groups. Using a string of jeweled beads of various colors hanging on his chest, he began to count the groups of variously colored cows. He would be happy if the count of his own and his friend's cows were correct. If the count was less, by a sound from his flute, he would move the missing cows into their correct group while calling their names. He then herd the cows and proceeded Raja. So he actually even used the flute for herding the cows because they would respond to all of the sounds. Apparently, the flute can communicate messages. In fact, it often happens with the... some parts you'll see something where Krishna, he was playing the flute and Radharani knew what he meant. It was kind of like a message he was sending to Radharani and then she'd meet him somewhere, something like that. So this flute was very, very versatile. Could do so many things for Krishna. This is kind of like his primary tool, you know, for spreading Krishna prema. Okay. Now I just want to finish by going to probably the most important writing we have on the flute, which is chapter 21 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, which is called the Vena Gita. And it's the Vena Gita is the gopis, mainly it's verses 1 through 20 that are describing the flute and glorifying the flute. Now, interesting, first the gopis speak with a little bit of envy. First they say, this flute is just a piece of bamboo, you know? So, I mean, what's the good of it? I mean, it's just something that grows along the banks of the river here, you know, you can pick one up anywhere. I mean, so it's just, you know, and it's just full of holes, you know. It's a stick with holes in it, you know. And they say, yeah, it gets to enjoy Krishna's lips continually. And they say, which were meant for us to enjoy. In other words, how does the flute always get Krishna's lips and we don't? you know, they're feeling great separation from Krishna, and therefore they're a little envious of the flute. I say, what do they do? You know? And they said, and they also say, but, and it's also male, so how does that work? They say, that's not fair. You know, they say all these things about the flute. But yet, you know, of course, they're incredibly attracted by the flute, too. But, and sometimes they act like, oh, this terrible flute, because it causes so much disturbance. It disrupts our, it even disrupts the chastity of the women. And, you know, in other words, because it's so powerful, influences them, and they sometimes are almost like opposed to it. Then, after that, they shift gears, and they start expressing the good fortune of others in relationship with the flute, and thus their own bad fortune. So they're kind of like praising and lamenting a little bit at the same time. How others who are enjoying the flute in Krishna's association. And then they go through some of the different categories of living entities and even non-living entities in Vrindavan. First of all, they talk about all of Vrindavan, how the peacocks dance madly and others remain stunned. Then they talk about the deer, how the deer worship and glance at him with affection. Now, they're even a little bit envious of the deer. Why? Because, they say, the female deer and the male deer, their husbands, they go with them and they enjoy it too. In other words, our husbands are stopping us from enjoying Krishna. And look at the deer. Her husbands are supporting them and they go with them. He says, well, you know, so in other words, it's almost like the deer are better off than we are. We should be so lucky to be a deer. Then they talk about the wives of the devatas. You know, the devatas, they seem like they're always flying around Vrindavan, don't they? In their airplanes, you know, during a lot of these pastimes, and they're showering flowers down on Krishna when he kills a demon or something. So, but they're up there, but also, when he plays the flute, it's described that the wives of the devatas develop great attraction for Krishna. And they say, and their husbands don't seem to mind. You know, they still let them come along with them. And he says, you know, then they talk about the cows, how the cows become stunned. Sometimes when Krishna plays the flute, the cows would be in the middle of chewing the grass, and, you know, the grass would just stay in their mouth and just stand there, you know. And they, or sometimes the calves will be, you know, drinking milk from their mothers, and they just stop. They just stay stunned, you know, just, and, you know, listening to the flute. Then even talk about, then the birds. We saw how the birds became silent. And sometimes if they were these sages, their whole consciousness changed. Then they talk about the river, the Yamuna River. Its currents change. It develops whirlpools. It becomes excited about. And then other times, the Yamuna River stops. It even changes directions. And no, then the clouds. The clouds will expand in ecstasy to shade Krishna in his pastime, so he'll be more comfortable, you know, from the sun. So they're saying not only all the living entities, but even the non-living entities. So here's an example in verse 15. Says, when the rivers hear the flute song of Krishna, their minds begin to desire him. And thus the flow of their currents is broken and the waters are agitated, moving around in whirlpools. Then the arms of the waves of the river embrace Murari's lotus feet and holding on to them present offerings of lotus flowers. Explain how the river will actually rise, come up, so it can try to touch Krishna's feet. So this flute is all attractive to everyone. And in fact, in another, later on in 10:29:40, when the gopis, right before the rasa dance, they're saying, in other words, we can't help it, you know, that we all came out here. You called us on your flute. They say, dear Krishna, what woman in all the three worlds wouldn't deviate from religious behavior when bewildered by the sweet, drawn-out melody of your flute? Your beauty makes all three worlds auspicious. That's 10:29:40. Okay, this is one more on the, this is again from Govinda Lilamrita, chapter 6, verses 14 and 15. By the sweet sound of the flute, Vrindavan became shaken with transformations of sattvika bhavas, and all living entities attained opposite qualities. Sattvika bhavas are like physical, visible transformations of ecstasy. Like you always hear about the time, even like in Chaitanya, Leela, you know, that they have, you know, goosebumps, hair standing on end, become, you know, choked up or become stunned or trim, you know, all of these physical responses to ecstasy are called sattvika bhavas. That's all in nectar devotion. It says, non-moving entities began to tremble, moving entities became paralyzed, stones became liquid with tears, colored flowers turned white, flowers began to ooze tears of sap, warbling birds become choked up. Creepers burst forth with new shoots like hairs standing on end. In this way, Vrindavan became glorious with Sattvika Bhavas. So, and of course, in chapter 29, we see how Krishna calls all the young gopis in Vrindavan to the Rasa dance just by playing his flute. They were completely drawn, and they couldn't resist. I mean, they could not do anything other than come when Krishna called them with his flute. In fact, some of them, you know, had to be physically locked up by their fathers or husbands or whatever, you know, to try to stop them. And they would do anything they could to get out, and to the point, well, that's a whole other story. But anyway, there's this, you know, this amazing attraction that all living entities have to the flute of Krishna. And even to the point where described that some of the rocks on Govardhan Hill will melt, and the water will come down like little rivulets or rivers coming down the side of the mountain. So very, very powerful, Krishna's flute. And he's always identified with his flute. We always see Krishna with his flute, right? It's like part of his sarup. You know, it's part of his original sarup shakti or chit shakti. You know, and it's very, very wonderful. And, you know, I'm just praying and waiting for someday I may get to be able to hear Krishna's flute. One of those, when a win will that day be mine kind of things. You know. So anyway, thank you all for your patience. I think that's it. And my Krishna's wonderful cows and flute for today. Glorious Prabhupada. Terrific round, Prabhupada.
Hari Bol. Very nice. You put a lot of effort into this class. You did a lot of work. Yeah, nice. A few comments. Like, in terms of a quote, you know, I know Srila Prabhupada quotes a lot when he's preaching. He quotes verses after verses. And he encourages devotees to do the same, you know, because that is to, you know, just like you said, when you're preaching, you must know where exactly this point is coming from or so, you know. Mm-hmm. So like quoting you, that is there. And so we must commend Pushkaran and Pundarika especially for quoting so much, you know. That's good. We have to encourage them. The other point I want to make is the cows, protection of the cows. And I think I'm feeling, I always feel guilty. Sometimes when I write online, I try to say the cow is specially sent to save humanity from bad karma, because by giving milk, which is packed of nutrients, it saves men from killing the animals. Hmm. By drinking the milk, you don't have to kill the animals for protein and nutrients. You see? Yeah. So sometimes I write along that line and I was thinking, if you have the amount of people that are living on earth, the atheists, Christians, Muslims, most of those eat the cow. If you put them together, if one cow a year, that's almost 7 billion cows a year gone there, you know. Mm-hmm. So we really have to put some effort to
You're saying Krishna has 7 billion cows?
I'm saying...
Did I hear it right?
Well, let me say the world has 8 billion people. Say 1 billion don't eat the cow, you know.
But I see.
But the rest...
I was going to say, I think Krishna does have 7 billion cows.
If they do one cow a year,
yeah.
You know, I mean, some do more, some maybe do less.
A lot of cows.
But the balance, you know, that's 7 billion cows gone, you know. So I think we have to put a little more effort to help in this cow production.
Because, you know, Prabhupada is saying how valuable milk is in human society. Many devotees have stopped drinking milk because of the principle of ahimsa, because, you know, they don't want to participate in the slaughterhouse industry. Well, I understand that. I drink milk because I think it's valuable to drink milk. But I think the answer that we all know, everyone agrees on the answer, is not to discontinue milk, but to protect cows. that's the point, that Prabhupada wanted us to start protecting cows and drinking milk from protected cows and doing that. And we haven't been real successful at that so much for our movement, although there's a lot of efforts and, you know, farm projects and things I really appreciate. But, yeah, we've got work to do on that.
In Brahma Sanghita 27 verse, we read here after Mangalarti every day, the whole Brahma Sanghita goes on. Benu Athan Inadasya. In the purport it writes, in the translation, that Gayatri, that we chant the Gayatri mantra, is the same Gayatri mantra manifested from the flute.
Is what?
From the flute of Krishna.
Oh yeah, it comes from Krishna's flute.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in our chanting, the first word, Kalama, Klim, we use the, well, we're not supposed to say it in public, but the Kalama, Klim, when we chant, that's actually directly connected with the flute.
Yeah, apparently.
So more we are attentive, we will be connected there. We generally don't talk about Gayatri Mantra so much.
Actually it's very important. I don't think because we're not supposed to say it out loud, it's hard to have a lot of discussions, unless you're with all of the Brahmins who've been given it. But it's very, very important. In fact, there's several little books by the different Goswamis and others just on, particularly verse, the sixth line and the seventh line. You know, and the sixth line was the one that was given directly to Brahma, right?
Yes.
And it's supposed to be a representation of the flute. As you said, the the Bij mantra, Kling, I think that's written everywhere. I think it's not really secret. You know, and that's very, it has all kinds of meanings. It represents all sorts of things, like Radha Krishna, living entity. I mean, you know, devotional service. It's, these are, you know, very powerful. And it did all come from Krishna's flute, the Lord Brahma. So that's a real good point. Thank you.
I wonder, like, we distribute that book, Brahma Sanghita.
Yeah.
If somebody is fortunate, if he opens it and read it, on the 27 verse he will see, Klim Krishnaya Govindaya Gopijana Vallavaya Sa.
That is
there.
It's right there.
It's nothing secret in one sense.
Yeah.
But it is secret, I guess.
But it should, the thing is, a mantra has, as far as I understand, a mantra has effectiveness if it's given to you by, you know, a pure devotee, or by a devotee of the Lord.
Yes, it makes it alive.
Yeah, just like, you know, we're all chanting Hare Krishna, everybody knows Hare Krishna, it's not secret or anything, but we were all really given, it was given to us through Srila Prabhupada, right? I mean, whether you're a direct disciple, you know, second, third, you know, generation, it's all coming from Srila. So in other words, it came from the pure words, the pure sound vibration of the pure spiritual master. You know, less, you know, like back before Srila Prabhupada was chanting, you know, Allen Ginsberg, we've all heard of him, the beatnik poet type of, a little bit degraded, but he was chanting Hare Krishna. You know, he'd gone to India, got the mantra before Prabhupada came to America, and he would do programs and he would have people chant Hare Krishna. You know how many devotees he made?
No.
Zero. You're right, none. Prabhupada comes, gives the Hare Krishna mantra, and you know how we have a whole movement all over the world. That's the power of the mantra coming from pure devotee. So if you're given a Gayatri mantra, you know, as part of Brahman initiation, then you know it's gonna have an effect. I don't think it'll have the same effect if you just picked up Brahma Samhita and read verse 27 or whatever it is, you know, and read it. Anyway. Okay, anything else?
Just an observation. You mentioned four sweetnesses of specific to Krishna and Vrindavan, I think, his form, his pastime, his smile or something. And one was the sweetness was the power. And it just struck me because, of course, everything about Krishna is sweet, but I don't usually think of power as being sweet. And so it just...
Yeah, that's interesting,
isn't it? Struck me, the sweetness of his power is...
Yeah, I should have read that more carefully because I thought, you know, someone might have a question about that. And I neglected to really study that well, but I'll give you my off-the-cuff sort of, you know, initial understanding. Obviously, to the devotee who is really involved with Krishna's sweetness, you know, in his, you know, Krishna form, especially his Vrindavan pastimes, which are all sweet, the Madhurya pastimes. You know, Madhurya just means sweetness, not necessarily just the gopis or whatever. You know, as opposed to Aishwarya pastimes, which are, of course, his power and majesty, more like the Dwarka and, of course, Vaikuntha and like that. But, in other words, the devotees who are in those Vrindavan pastimes see everything sweet about Krishna. And there's a balance, and that sweetness and power is something that our acharyas speak about a lot. that, and on one hand, Krishna is all-powerful. You know, he runs everything, entire universes, spiritual, material worlds, everything. And on the other hand, he shows us his human-like form and his very sweet pastimes in Vrindavan, right? And there's kind of a balance. You know, if you have too much Aishwarya, it kind of diminishes the sweetness, the Madhurya. You know, just like the example of Krishna shows Mother Yashoda his power, his Aishwarya, and she looks in his mouth. It bewilders her, gets her kind of confused, it throws off her whole vatsalya relationship, so Krishna Yogamaya quickly cover her back over, so she can just think about Krishna as my little baby, like that. So, I guess there is a way. Jiva Goswami was explaining it like, you have this mixture in Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, but the sweetness always overcomes. There's always, I guess, on top. For instance, Krishna kills demons. Now, that's power, isn't it? Huge, powerful demons. He's killing them. But he does it in a mood of sweetness. He doesn't like endure. What happens when he's fighting, when first time Jarasandha attacks Mathura, he comes out there with Sudarshan chakras and arrows and swords and clubs and destroys Akshuhini's millions and millions of soldiers. I mean, you know, full armor, battle gear. That's Aishwarya, that's power. You know, that's where Krishna really shows his power. How does he kill demons when you think about Vrindavan? Shakadasura, the cart demon. Little baby kicks his foot, right? Chanavarta. In fact, they didn't even, they all had all these other reasons at first. They didn't even think he was anything special. You know, Trinavarta? Whirlwind?
Yes.
Okay. What did he do? Well, he just held him around his neck. And that was the end of Trinavarta. Falls down. They said, oh, he was saved by providence, by Narayana, or whatever. You know, so in other words, he does things in such a way. Agasura. He'll be, what are they doing? They're walking right into his mouth. And before he can do anything, they're all in there because they think, oh, Krishna will save us. You know, what can he do? So what does he do? He walks in and somehow or another increases the size, busts through, you know, and kills Agasura, chokes him, and Agasura's spirit soul goes up to the top of his head. But he does it all, in other words, in that still keeping that human form, that human sweetness. So, you know, what happens is the coward boys come back saying, oh, Krishna did this, and they sing songs about us killing demons, and they all say, oh, our friend is, you know, really great, isn't he? You know, and so in other words, it doesn't disrupt their primary losses. Right, so in other words, it's balanced. So in that way, his power is actually sweetens the rasas in Vrindavan. In other words, it actually does. It's explained that they're actually increased or expanded. You know, like, you know, he does all these wonderful things. What do the gopis say? Isn't it wonderful? And even if they think he's God, oh, that's really nice that, you know, our lover is God. Or mother, when Nanda had explained to the coward men after Krishna showed them Goloka and after Govardhan, the lifting of Govardhan Hill, he had to tell them, Garga Muni told them at the name-giving ceremony, you know, that, well, he says, your son will be as good as Narayan. So how did they interpret it? Oh, he'll have a lot of power from Narayan, he'll be like kind of like Narayan, especially in power. They go, oh, yeah, we can see that. That's great. Okay. Now, and then they even said, but Krishna still has such great affection for us, and we have such great affection for him. In other words, it's not how you'd feel about you saw Narayan in front of you. You'd be like, you know, on the floor obeisances, right? So it's, I think in that way, that's how one of his sweetnesses might be even his power. That's my best shot at it. Anyone have any other ideas on that one?
That's good.
I didn't have a chance to think about it.
That's good.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you so much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah.